It's the Bob McCallum Podcast, and it's brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the Bet Rivers online casino and sportsbook app today. McCallum here, Shannon there.
Yes, sir.
Well, little hoops today. We'll chat.
Are you worried about the Raptors, Bob?
Actually, no, I'm not. Are you?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I don't think we've seen the Raptors since about game 7 or 8.
Yeah, I don't think.
A bunch of guys with Raptor uniforms on.
But the East is pretty tough, Bob. And I mean, listen, all 14 teams, or, you know, how many teams there seem to make the playoffs now in the NBA. So it's not going to be, you know, there's going to be a play-in game if you don't make the top seven. But I am concerned. I am concerned because there's nothing to say. I understand injuries, but you know what? I don't know how the people are going to think they're going to go away and everybody's going to come back healthy. People are going to hurt again. I mean, that's what it appears to be to me.
Well, I guess that's the real concern, is that this becomes kind of an ongoing thing throughout the year. There's one injury after another. This team has been very healthy for years. So maybe they're due to have one of these kinds of seasons where people are hurt constantly over and over again.
Tell this team who lived in Tampa. Tell this team who were affected by COVID more than any other team in the National Basketball Association.
I get it. But, well, we'll talk about them. Our friends Paul Jones and Eric Smith will pop by, and we'll talk about the Raptors and the NBA in general when we come back after these messages. Hi, this is Bob McCallum for BetRivers.com. Hey, if you're looking for a sports book or casino app, you should check out the Bet Rivers Sports and Casino app today. Play all of your favorite casino games for real money anywhere and anytime. Plus, get in the action with each sports game with hundreds of sports betting options. And get ready to feel like a VIP, because you'll earn both loyalty level points and bonus store points on every real money wager you make. You must be 19 plus, available in Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 or speak to an advisor free of charge. BetRivers.com. Well, time for some basketball chatter, McCallum, and what's your name again?
Shannon.
That's right. With you, along with Smith and Jones of Sportsnet, respectively, about the Raptors a little bit. It's been an interesting beginning to this season, obviously. The injuries have really dominated the news. And this team is playing all right, considering what has happened to them. This is about as bad as it can get, I would think. Don't you agree, Jones?
Bobcat, that's surprisingly optimistic for you. Are you feeling okay today?
Well, it is.
Perhaps it is not.
Did somebody put sugar in your cornflakes?
Something like that.
Oh, my goodness.
No, you're right, though. And I kind of feel the same way, that they are battling through the storm right now. Like Eric and I, in the game the other night, we looked at who was out. What did we say? Arguably six, seven of your top 10 players.
Yeah.
And they had a lineup out. I mean,
they almost won the game, and they should have won the game.
Yeah, exactly. They had a lineup out in street clothes that could be a finishing lineup in a close game, with the likes of Otto Porter, Chris Boucher, Precious Achiuwa, Pascal Siakam. I mean, Gary Trent Jr. Those are guys that were on the floor that frustrated Atlanta to the point, mind you, it might have been one of those games for Atlanta last time, but they broke the cash register for $1.43 or something like that, $1.39. And they should have won that game against Atlanta. And if they can fight through these injuries, and the East is tough this year, you know, you lose 2-3 games in a row, you win 2-3 games in a row, you can move in the standings big time because it's so tight.
Guys are getting an opportunity that would not have had an opportunity under normal circumstances. What does that mean in the long run? Smith, I'll give it to you.
You know, I think clearly, I mean, we all would know, I think, when this happens, you know, it gives an opportunity to a guy that ordinarily might not be playing some minutes, and it's an opportunity to kind of get in the coach's good graces. And I think the guy that maybe we would put at the top of that list right now would be Malachi Flynn, because he's kind of been much maligned over his couple of years here in Toronto, where he hasn't been able to truly find a role. He's played really well so far, I think, in the limited time we've seen him.
Yeah.
And he's been one of the more reliable three-point shooters for a team that, at least over the last four or five games, is shooting around 25% from distance. So they need the shooting, let alone his ability to get to the tin. And I'm sure learning under the, you know, under the wing of a Fred VanVleet, sort of finishing as a small man in the lane and whatnot. So I've been impressed by Malachi. And the other guy, I guess, Bob, that really stands out big time, is a guy that was going to have a role, but not this much of a role. And that's Thaddeus Young. Like, he's played incredibly, especially when you factor in playing sort of undersized, playing the five for a guy that came into the league as a three, then started playing the four. Now he's playing the five, going up against a bunch of bigs and a bunch of guys that are a heck of a lot bigger than him, a heck of a lot younger than him. He has been a major common presence. And somebody made the mention the other day to Freddie VanVleet in asking about Thad's role right now. It was sort of posed to Fred. Does he remind you kind of just his role, not his necessarily his game, but his role and the veteran that he is, the mind that he has? Does it remind you of having Marc Gasol back? And Fred's like, that's a great comparison. The impact he has on our team, where it's beyond just the stats, it's the intangibles, it's the passing from a high post, at orchestrating the offense, all that stuff. And then I talked to Thad yesterday. One of the things he said that he's often trying to point out to guys on the floor, when he makes a pass, he's already saying, make the hockey pass. He's pointing to the next guy, saying, I'm not giving it to you for you to shoot. I'm giving it to you to make the next play, because he's seeing that and he's trying to instill that in a lot of the guys. So I think his role right now can't be kind of heralded enough.
The question for me becomes, what does this mean when everybody's healthy? Mm. Do you give more minutes to guys who have shown well, who would not have been given that opportunity under normal circumstances?
I think it depends on the situation, Bobcat. If you're struggling, or the team is struggling, I mean, it's classic pro sports, team sports, that you have injuries, other guys get an opportunity. If they show well and can keep the ship going in the right direction, then when your starters, or, you know, you don't lose your job because you're injured, when those people come back, they're working themselves back. You'll allow them some time, but you may have a shorter leash until those guys really hit their stride, knowing the other guys are okay. That being said, let's stop the talk. You're never better without your best players. Mm. You're not. So it elevates the level of play. The old adage, a rising tide lifts all boats. Those guys come back. The other guys have already been playing well. It gives Nick combinations to go to. And we know he loves to experiment. He will, you know, he puts guys in different spots. He pushes buttons. He goes down the bench to, like, bypasses two or three guys. Instead of going to the sixth or the seventh man, he goes to the ninth man and puts him in. And people kind of go, oh, they're putting such and such in. They're putting Wancho in. And it works out. So I think it's part of Nick Nurse's overall, his philosophy of keep everybody ready. Never know when I'm going to need them. Keep the internal organic development going. I wouldn't say guys are looking over their shoulders, but they know there's a little bit of juice out there to perform. So I just think it makes them better when everybody's back healthy.
Well,
but
you know, go ahead.
No, you go, Eric.
I was going to say, it also, to me, is a gut check time for a lot of the guys, again, when healthy, or should I say if healthy, because Jonesy, you and I wrote there what was one of the main themes in training camp. Wow, this team is so deep. Wow, this team has so many different options. Wow, this team has more depth than they had in recent years. And you can think of guys that might be at the 12, 13, 14, 15 spots on this team that might have been in the second unit last year, that might have even been starting last year, i.e. a Kem Birch. And he's deep on the bench now. But everybody was saying, we love our depth. We're a great team. It doesn't matter. It's about the we, not the me. Okay, well, now let's see, because now you've had a chance to play. And when the team gets healthy again, are you going to be okay going back to maybe not playing, or playing 3-4 minutes a game, as opposed to playing 15 or 22 like you're getting right now?
Yeah.
That is going to be the challenge. That is absolutely going to be a challenge.
But unlike Mr. Sunshine McCollin here, I've got to ask the question: why this team is so injured? I mean, what has happened in these first 17 games that has put this team in this? I'm not going to say precarious, but in this position. What do you think, Paul?
I think it's all over the league, John. And I, and you know, it was an interesting theory I heard from in talking to former Chicago Bull and Canadian national teamer Billy Wennington. He said the guys work out, but they don't play basketball anymore. They you know, they don't play pickup. They're working out, but they're not used to all these movements with this intensity early in the year. Let's face it, you know, 25 years ago, you came to training camp to get in shape. There were two-a-days. It was longer. They don't have that now. The collective agreement only lets you on the floor so many times, so many two-a-days. And guys are working out more in the summer, but they're in good shape. He thinks they're not necessarily in great basketball shape. And you get pulls and strains and stuff like that. And then the sheer intensity, I think, of the schedule ramping up so quickly. Mm-hmm. It happens a lot around the league. Some of it freak injury. Scotty Barnes has stepped on, he's still in the lineup, but that left ankle has stepped on so many people so many times in the last three or four games. I mean, maybe it cost him the game at the end when he couldn't elevate for a dunk to make a layup. I don't know if it's just Toronto, John, or it's kind of a league-wide thing when you look at, you know, some of the top names.
Well, and Jonesy, to follow up on that too, you think about Pascal. He slips, right? Was it a wet spot on the floor? His leg slides out and he strains the groin. Otto Porter dislocates or breaks a toe or whatever. A lot of guys were missing time because of sickness as well. Fred not only says, but he looks like he's in the best shape of his life, but he tweaks his back. And, you know, we all know, especially as guys that are a heck of a lot older than Fred VanVleet, your back goes and how much that can kind of affect you. So it doesn't seem like it's certainly a case of, and I'm not saying that you were saying this, John, but where the training staff isn't doing their job, where these guys aren't prepared. They're in shape. They're ready. They're good to go. But it's almost like it's these fluky sort of things. And I'll follow this up as well, just because it was a theme or conversation yesterday, sort of just away from the microphones and the cameras amongst a bunch of, you know, reporters and media dudes that were at practice on Tuesday. Somebody just sort of theorized or threw out there. I can't even remember who it was. I'd give them credit for the idea. It might've been Eric Kareem from The Athletic. When was the last time this team, and I'm knocking on my desk right now for all Raptor fans, when was the last time this team had a legitimate, like I'm talking catastrophic injury where a guy missed half a season, a full season even? We couldn't come up with a name. The one name that popped in our mind, the last significant player, was Jorge Garbajosa. And we're talking now, what, 15 years ago almost? And again, I'm knocking on wood. Like, had Siakam had that shoulder issue that ultimately resulted in shoulder surgery leading into last season and last year's offseason, he probably would have missed the entire year because he took 5 months to recover from that shoulder injury and then the resulting surgery. But overall, in spite of how bad it looks right now, this team has remained relatively healthy and at least amongst the star players has not lost players for a significant length of time, again, knocking on wood, in a heck of a long time.
That's why you have depth. Right. Look at what they played with on Saturday night and, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, Bobcat.
Yeah. I wonder if, do you think guys are held out longer at this time of year because of the time of year? Like if you get an injury.
Absolutely.
Instead of sitting three or four games, you sit five or six.
Yeah. Be safe. Play the long game. And you know, that's why, you know, the whole load management thing is become, you know, become trendy and people are looking at the long game. I mean, look at the NBA schedule. How'd you like to be a fan in New Orleans? They've already had two trips from the Golden State Warriors, both times on the second night of a back-to-back and both times Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond, like four guys sat out, four of their major championship cogs were sitting on the bench in street clothes. I mean, Steve Kerr came out in the media and apologized, said, you know, I'm really sorry. I understand the fans, but our goal is to play the long game and have our guys healthy for when it really counts in April and May. Now, mind you, the way Golden State is going at times, especially on the road, they might have lots of time to rest in April and May, but everybody's playing the long game, Bobcat, and they're being extremely cautious early in the season.
One of the questions you touched on Flynn, Eric, do you see more of an upside now? Do you see him getting the benefit of the doubt once in a while? You know, he's lived on the end of the bench because there are times where Nick Nurse has just won't even look at him. But with the injuries and the opportunity he's going to get, do you see some growth in his game?
I do, John. I mean, I mentioned the three-point shooting certainly standing out more than anything.
And they need that.
Especially because they need it right now, no doubt. I think, as I said, too, his ability to get into the lane, I think he's showing a little bit more aggressiveness. I'll hand the baton to Jonesy here in a second, because I know I don't want to steal his thoughts and make them my own or something, because we talked at great length about Malachi on a couple broadcasts ago. And one of the things that we both talked about, and Jonesy, you certainly noted as well, is he's always been an aggressive player. He's not a guy that necessarily has needed or wanted more confidence. He's a confident kid. But if not given the opportunity, then how do you show that? So now that he's getting into the game, you start thinking, all right, hold on a second. This guy's got a little moxie to him. He's got a little bit of an edge. He doesn't back down from people. And Jonesy, now that he's playing, we're starting to see it more and more. And I guess that sort of sets up a potential battle in a sense where, all right, Delano Banton was one of the best guys coming out of camp, like one of the best guys, period, amongst all the players. Now when you're looking for a backup guard and somebody to spell off Fred VanVleet, knowing that Scotty Barnes and so many others can also handle the ball, how does it shift for Nick Nurse in terms of the rotation? I think that's the big question right now, especially when it comes to Banton and Flynn.
Boy, it would have been different on Saturday night if they'd have had Malachi and he hadn't have fouled out. He was at a season high 17 points. And, you know, John and Bobcat, you look at guys in a professional league that are professional. They sit, they're patient, they could be playing more, but they wait their turn, and when it's their time, they get in there, they do their thing. And we know the sexiest guy on the team is always the backup quarterback. And I'll give Malachi credit for
The sexiest guy on the team is the backup quarterback?
Jonesy must have been a backup quarterback.
The guy that everybody wants to see is that guy on the bench. Put him in, right? I look at Malachi and he's learned that in like 3 years, because in the first year, the Tampa year, he had a lot of time to spend with Kyle and Fred. Mm-hmm. And now he's watching Fred as a guy his size being very successful in this league. And he's just sitting and waiting his turn. And I think he's doing an excellent job when he gets in the game and he's able to, you know, handle the ball. He's not making a lot of mistakes. It's not, oh, that's why they don't play him when they put him in, right? I think he's doing an excellent job. He's become a good young professional. And hey, man, he's worked on his game. When he gets a one-on-one matchup, he's in his bag of tricks and shaking guys and creating separation and knocking down shots. When it comes to catch and shoot on a three, he's ready. So that shows me he's put the work in. But no guarantees, right? Be ready. So stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And I think that's a philosophy that he subscribed to, and taking his time whenever he can get it.
The one guy who's got minutes during this situation that I wouldn't have expected, I suppose. I'm not even sure I knew he was on the team, was Hernan Gomez.
Bo Cruz.
Yeah.
Well, he obviously wasn't the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, he was in a movie, John. Come on. But there's a guy. Eric and I talked about it. There's a guy. In that win over Miami, they had a 21-0 run in the middle of the third quarter. He was on the floor, didn't score a point.
Yeah.
Did not score a point. Think had 8 or 9 rebounds in the game, moved the ball. Somebody's taught him how to play. He knows his role. I'm going to, when I get it, catch and shoot, minimal dribbles, but still playmaking, moving, cutting. And I wouldn't say he's the greatest one-on-one defender, but he's in a passing lane. He's getting a deflection. His hands are active. He rebounds. He runs the floor. I just think he knows his role, and he's a very helpful piece, Bobcat. You're right.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have thought he'd get much time at all. One guy who's had less time than I thought he would get given the injuries is Koloko. And yet there's a lot in his game that you have to like. E, what do you think?
Yeah, you know what? And Nick touched on it the other night, based on how he played in Atlanta. He said, you know, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but he was playing significant minutes, Bob, and starting a bunch of games, and then sort of had it reduced a little bit. And then Nick was saying that he liked what he saw from Koloko and how active he was in that Atlanta game. And does that kind of bring him back up in the rotation a little bit more? I think it's a product of, like, I would say overall, if I'm grading his year so far, it's at the very least a B minus for a rookie starting games for this team above 500. Knowing his role, he knows he's not going to get the ball a whole ton in terms of wanting him to shoot, but he's already got a pretty good synergy with Fred VanVleet in terms of finishing, you know, on the lobs and high above the rim. Obviously an active shot blocker, decent defender overall in terms of guarding his position. I think it's just the mental lapses that you probably expect or anticipate from a rookie, and not to call him out because there were a whole lot of mistakes, but he was one of the guys on the floor that made a crucial mistake in that final play of the game in Atlanta that allowed Trae Young to get across center and ultimately lob it to Griffin behind the scene that nobody was guarding, and the Raps lose at the buzzer. Koloko was one of those guys. So I think it's just fighting through some of those, you know, rookie mistakes, but overall I've liked his game. And he doesn't look out of place. That's the biggest thing to me in any sport. When a guy looks out of place as a youngster, you going back to Jonesy's point, does he need to sit and learn, like, say, Malachi did with Fred and with Kyle? Koloko doesn't look out of place, and he's making an impact already. So I've been happy with what I've seen from him.
Well, Koloko was a guy who I think we've all thought would spend a lot of time in the 905.
Yes.
Did you not?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like probably most of the season.
Yeah, and yeah,
now you're not sure if he's going to go down there or not.
No, he's become, I wouldn't say a fixture, but an important piece, because defensively, and you're not looking at anything, you know, offensively from the kid that you need or crave. They got enough people to score, but defensively he fits the player spectrum. Long, athletic. I mean, again, I keep referring to Nate McMillan's comments when the Hawks came in. He said you could take the names and numbers and off the jerseys, and it's the same guy. And we watched that game. Trae Young was guarded by Scotty Barnes. The easiest way to get a better matchup in the NBA these days, because everybody switches, is look for the lousiest guy on the floor or the poorest defender, call his man up to set a screen. Now you get him, and you go to work on him. Well, Trae Young calls for a screen, and they screen off, and now he's being guarded by Boucher. And then they screen off, and now he's being guarded by Otto Porter Jr. He's like, wait a minute, is every guy on this floor 6'9"? And put Koloko in there at 7'1", who can do all of those things, and protect the rim. I mean, this kid's blocking shots around the rim and has people looking for him, and that's a different kind of rim protection. People have always been clamoring, oh, the Raptors need a five, they need a five. Well, they found a good, young, new age five man that fits their player spectrum in every other way defensively.
Does he change what the mad scientist does? I mean, when you think about it, when you think that, you know, that it's interchangeable parts for Nick Nurse, and when Nick's on, he's saying, you know, we're just sitting dreaming up new ideas and new thoughts. But when you have a 7-1 guy that's that strong defensively, at least, does that change your long-term game plan stuff?
You look for more of them, John. Go ahead.
Well, and I would just echo that. I don't think it changes it a ton, but I guess even I'm just more looking short term than long term. You need him right now. And going back to, I don't know what, 15, 20 minutes ago when Bob was talking about guys playing that ultimately end up earning more, you need him now. He plays well now. Then you do maybe go to him more in the future, which then plays into what you're saying, John, in terms of changing the plan or changing the mindset. I think of the game against the Nets specifically tonight, at least for one night only, we're assuming that Scotty Barnes isn't playing. Pascal Siakam's still out. Otto Porter's still out. Precious Achiuwa's still out. Like, that's four of your guys there. So when we talk about this length and this interchangeable parts and everybody being 6'9 or above, there's four major guys right there that are out. So you need Koloko, period. Right. And going back to what I said before, knowing that you need him, you feel confident going to him because he's not looked out of place and he has performed well more than he has struggled.
Let's talk a little bit about the guys who are injured. Do you have a sense of what the time frame is for a return or somebody like, let's start with Siakam.
Siakam, Nick said on Tuesday that he was back on the floor doing some light work, nothing major. They're going to try to ramp it up heading into next week. And he said, not making any statements per se, but he said they were hopeful of looking at towards the end of next week. So we might be 7 to 10 days away from Pascal's return, maybe. And the feeling on Scotty Barnes, He's not actually listed as questionable with an ankle. It's actually a knee sprain. And nobody seems to know when or where or how he did it. And maybe it's just one of those cumulative things of like the ankle's bad, which makes you walk or run different or something, and you tweak your knee. But the fact that they're listing him as day-to-day, I know a lot of people are kind of taking as a positive sign, Bob, that perhaps that means that it's not that serious. And we see Scotty much, much sooner than later. Like, I don't even know if he'll play tonight. But, you know, if he misses a game or two, I don't anticipate it being a week or two.
What about what do you know about Trent and Porter?
Trent's going to be back. Trent's going to be back tonight, as will Chris Boucher, and Otto Porter still out. I don't know a timeline on him.
Hey, speaking of Trent, I in reading some of Nick's quotes, and I wasn't there, so but in reading them, I got a little sense of exasperation. Is that fair, Paul?
You know, the same kind of thing, John. Maybe. Look, Nick has, as much as Nick has come into the league as an offensive guy and, you know, was Dwayne's offensive coordinator, and he said always used to think about how we get buckets, he's become a defensive guy. And he realized what the defensive cast did the year they won the championship, the season they won the championship, and he's looking for that now. And maybe my extrapolation is maybe that's just what he wants from Gary. Better defense, more defense. I mean, kids a scorer. He's had a few games offensively that have been real clunkers, like real clunkers. The good thing is he's not turning down those shots. He's still staying aggressive, which makes the defense, I mean, they might sag off him a little, but, you know, he's a guy, he hits a couple, he gets it going. He can, you know, heat up in a hurry. You know, I think that might be just a coach's method of giving him a little bit of a motivational push.
Hey, can I jump in on that for a second too? Because John Jonesy and I don't go to every practice. Like, he's at some, I'm not. I'm at some, he's not. I just happened to be there yesterday. And I would say to Raptor fans watching or listening or whatever else, this to me is a, maybe not a classic example, but an example of tone and body language versus the black and white written in the paper. So if
that's
you have
what
a chance,
I was wondering.
If you have a chance to see the video, because the question that was posed to Nick, and again, paraphrasing here, was Gary Trent last year was averaging about 3.5 deflections per game. And at one point was leading the league and was regularly in the top 5 in the league in deflections. Now he's down to about 2.4. Do you need to see more, want to see more from Gary? Does he need to get back to that? And it was kind of Nick going, yeah, you know, like, yeah, you know, we need more from Gary. And let's be honest, he hasn't been as good as we need. And then again, I'm paraphrasing his exact quote, but it wasn't like he just sort of walked up to the microphone and said, guys, man, Gary Trent's been terrible and we need him to be, you know, like, he was asked a specific question about a specific number with proof in the pudding of, yes, his numbers are down. And it was like, yeah, we need him to be better. We want him to be better. And he needs to be more aggressive. And for us to be successful, he needs to be that guy. And if he's not going to be that guy, then, well, he needs to be that guy and figure it out, or we got to find something else. So, you know, it's kind of like, let's go, let's get it going again. That's kind of more how it was, not this like, wow, I'm jamming him under the bus right now. Like, but that's not the way I took it.
No, because I think I just couldn't see Nick being that frustrated right now with everything that's going on. And so when you read the quote, it looks like one thing. And when you hear what you say, it makes a ton more sense, I think.
Yeah, and Gary came and spoke afterwards as well, and he was asked about that. Nobody really said, hey, Nick said this, but it's just, hey, do you need to be better and do you need to get back? And he kind of just, he's a really, obviously very low-key, you know, chill kind of guy. And he just said, listen, maybe I need to do a little more, but I'm still out there trying hard. I'm playing my best, and I know my role, and yada, yada, yada. Like, he didn't really kind of come down and say, yes, I acknowledge I haven't been as good or that I'm a step slower or anything like that. So to me, at least what he was saying, he's kind of brushing it off like, whatever, man, I'm not going to sit here and worry that I'm at 2.4 instead of 3.5 and we're only 17, 18 games into the season. Let's kind of pump the brakes a bit.
I have spent a fair bit of time, as Shannon will attest, on OG Anunoby.
Oh, 20, it's 27 minutes in, boys. This might be a record. 27 minutes in and we finally get to Anunoby.
Yeah. but I got to tell you, he's played really well the last last while, and I wonder.
Oh boy, more sunshine.
I know, Heart Attack City.
My heart.
That's not a logo. That's a halo, right? Is that?
And I only wonder if this continues, or is he going to go back to deferring most of the time offensively when the big guys get back?
Well, I don't know if deferring is the right word, Bob. I mean, he falls into a spot in the pecking order, and maybe he'll go back to that, but you would hope that he stays aggressive offensively. And here's the thing. He's so invaluable at the other end of the floor. He's one of a handful of guys that I've seen in watching basketball since, well, Eric won't, but Bobcat, you and John and I are old enough to remember Wilt and the treatment that Wilt got as a big guy, getting fouls for just being bigger and stronger. And OG falls in that category sometimes. Like he's just country strong. Like he'll go up for a rebound, guys will bounce off him, and he'll get called for a foul and turn around and go, what? I was going for the ball. And, he's invaluable at the defensive end. His lateral quickness, his ability to keep people in front of him, his anticipatory skills, like he's in passing lanes, making steals. I mean, he's talked about being defensive player of the year. And if this team's overall defensive rating comes up, he's going to be on the radar. As for the offense, Bobcat, I think when the other guys come back, he'll fall into another place in the pecking order. But that doesn't mean he can't be at the top of the list on any given night.
You know, the other thing that stands out to me with OG, and I'm never going to be mistaken as a motivational speaker or anything, or have some, you know, grandiose views on life to change the world. But I'm a big believer in like the positive vibes that you sort of give out. And when you're feeling good, you know, when you look good, you feel good. And when you feel good, you act good and whatever else. OG's been the kind of guy where he's been pretty low key, hasn't been overly chatty, whether it be with the media or with the public, but everything you've heard, right, Jonesy, over the years,
yeah,
is that he's one of the funniest dudes in the locker room, and he's super friendly with teammates, and guys are always saying nothing but positive things about OG. Now, I've never had a bad experience with him. I don't think Jonesy has either.
No.
He's one of the few guys that'll walk by and like, what's up, Eric? How you doing? Hey, Jonesy. Like, he's a friendly guy. He's a nice guy, but he's not a chatty guy, and he's kind of a reserved guy. But yet this year, as Jonesy just said, have we ever heard OG Anunoby say, I want to be defensive player of the year. I want my game recognized. Then he comes out a week or so ago and says, I want to be an all-star. I want my game recognized as an offensive player as well. Doing interviews, talking more, taking more of a leadership role. Mm-hmm. I feel like now that his game is showing out more and more, he's coming out more and more, and the confidence and the swagger in which he's carrying himself away from the floor is carrying into the games between the lines as well. I could be wrong with that theory, but I just feel like when you're playing well and you're playing with that confidence, it all spills out.
Hey, yeah. And he's relatively healthy.
Yeah.
And that helps a
huge
lot.
Huge key, John. Huge key, John.
Yeah.
Huge key.
Guys, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with Smith and Jones in just a second.
And now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. These days, more athletes are speaking out about the importance of mental health. But you don't have to be in the pros to take care of your mental well-being and being focused and in the zone. Therapy is the best way to stay in peak mental shape. We've all seen firsthand the benefits of unloading the stress, of working through the emotional healing, and dealing with anxiety and depression. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, accessible, and online. Get matched with a therapist after filling out a brief survey, and you can switch therapists at any time. When you're ready to feel at the top of your game, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/bobcast today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/bobcast.
Basketball on the agenda today. Smith and Jones are with us. Well, let's talk about elsewhere in the NBA.
Wait, hey, before we do that, can I just one more Raptor thought?
No.
Because we got time, Bob. You know, we got time. You know, because just because you're Captain Sunshine today doesn't mean, you know, you can't look at other stuff.
Get on with it.
You know, we've touched on Flynn, and we touched on Anunoby, but it speaks to players after they're drafted needing time. You know, players at 20 years old can't necessarily play this game properly, and they need to mature, and people need to be patient, and you need organizations to be patient with players. And we don't see enough of that, Paul, not just in basketball, but in every league. So when you see a guy like Flynn finally getting opportunity, getting a little bit better, Ananobi's always been great defensively, but now you're seeing a more complete game. Patience is really important for organizations, isn't it?
It is, John, and it speaks to something that the Raptors have been known for, especially the last little while. Development. They have been picking low in the draft. They find guys undrafted. I go through all the time and being patient and putting the time into developing them. And I go through, and I, as I said, all the time, I'll go back to DeLon Wright was picked 20th. Norman Powell was traded for as a second rounder for Gravis Vasquez. I think Norm was picked in the 40s. Fred was undrafted. Pascal was 27. Just go down the list. Malachi Flynn was I think it was 22nd or something like that. Just Coloco is 33rd. Mm-hmm. Like, just go down the list of all the guys that they've chosen and developed, and now they're applying their craft in a very successful way. So, John, your point is well made in that it takes time. There's no magic wand, as Dwayne Casey used to say, and you put the time in and the work in and development, and you got to have the patience in there. I mean, the classic story last year when Nick said Masai came into his office and he's yelling at Nick about Precious. What's he doing out there? What? And Nick is like, we're working with him. Like, let's be patient. Let's let him kind of explore the boundaries of his lane. And there's a guy that really came on in the second half of the year, and you hope that he gets better and can jump back on the train when he's healthy this year.
All right, I want to take a look at some other stories around the NBA. And the one that intrigues me the most, and more as every day passes, are the champions, the Golden State Warriors,
yeah.
Are 8-10. And you want to buy into the theory that they're just coasting and they'll be fine and they understand it's a long season and all that. But is there something going on there? Are they something less than what we would have expected?
I probably would have been in the same boat, Bob, as wanting to say they're coasting and they'll be fine and they'll figure it out. And I kind of do feel more that than anything. However, I think Father Time's creeping up a little bit as well. You know, Steph Curry still looks incredible, but I think Draymond Green doesn't look as crisp as he once did. Isn't making the same kind of impact that he once did.
True.
I think the only way he's doing that is with Jordan Poole, right?
So. Yeah.
Yes. I think Klay Thompson in fighting back. Now, granted, I know just a couple of games ago, a couple of nights ago, he had an incredible 40-plus point performance, but I think the injuries that he's had to battle through, the surgeries that he's had to come back from, I think that impacts his overall game, because as much as we talk about his scoring, we maybe sometimes forget, oh yeah, by the way, this guy was among the top 3-5 defenders in the game at one point as well. And I also just think that the supporting cast isn't perhaps as good as it needs to be. I think they lost a key piece from last year in Otto Porter. We just haven't seen him make an impact yet in Toronto because he's been hurt and been out so much. But I just think the supporting cast needs to be more. And that's a team where, and you know how much I hate fantasy trades and everything else, that's a team I'm looking at to make some sort of a deal, because they do have some younger pieces. The problem is those younger pieces aren't playing so well. So the value of what they might get back for some of that supporting cast that I say isn't that good. How are you going to improve your supporting cast when the current cast you have ain't that good? So now their return is not going to be that great when you hit the open market. So they are going to be interesting, but I think they need to do something to kind of light a bit of a fire.
Are they on cruise control, Jones?
No, they're not. No, they're not. And Eric was on with that. They keep talking about Steph and Draymond and Clay and, you know, how, you know, the cornerstones and, you know, the vets. That's great. But I saw a stat yesterday where they are a +9 when Steph Curry's on the floor. And I'm not a big plus minus guy. I don't think it is as important a stat in basketball as it is, say, in hockey. Because of the lineups in basketball. But for what it was worth, I looked at it, I thought, that's interesting. They were plus nine was when Steph was on the floor and a minus 23 when he was off the floor. And some of these young guys that, oh, you know, Kuminga and Moody and Poole and Wiseman, and oh, wait till they get, well, we're waiting for them. Like when Steph and Draymond go to the bench and those guys go in, leads disappear or close games turn into, oh, now we're down 12, 14. Those guys aren't playing that well. And John, you know, we kind of laugh about the whole, well, not laugh. We look at the whole Jordan Poole situation, but the Warriors are saying something by paying him and Andrew Wiggins a whole ton of money. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're next. You're the next generation. And what does that say to those proud vets? I mean, you guys have been around this business. What does that say to, not necessarily Steph, but you? We heard Klay Thompson go off in the media a little while ago. Draymond has been, you know, he's been as quiet as a church mouse. Is he not? Is he playing with the same fervor and enthusiasm and you know, feistiness that he played with? I don't know. The Punch have something to do with that. These guys getting all this money. Like, what about me? Are they looking over their shoulder? Well, I'm up for a contract next year. Am I going to get that? And I just think there's a whole mix of things leading to Bobcat, John, not on cruise control. This needs to be fixed.
Well, first of all, Jordan Poole's an interesting one because he became such a factor during the playoffs last year. He was so impactful. And then you wonder in the offseason after a championship ring, big money, what goes through his mind? Does he have that pedigree to say, I'm going to fight through it like the other guys did? You know,
Pat Riley used to call it the disease of me.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's what's happening with Jordan Poole. I don't know.
And on the other side, this is a cold-hearted business, to Eric's point.
Yes.
You know, the job of the general manager, the job of ownership is to continue to win. It doesn't matter who's in the lineup. And did last year's championship win give ownership and management license to keep the team together for one more year, give it one more chance? Had they not won last year, would there have been more change? Because loyalty's a fine line in professional sports. You know that. There are tons of examples of teams that stuck with veterans 1 year too long and it's hurt them for 5 years. And you have to wonder what,
John,
and they're still
for it.
That's
like,
right.
Look at the money. I mean, literally paying for it. Like their payroll, there's something like, did I hear something like 30 million into the tax? Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous the amount of money they're paying. So let's see how long the window stays open, but great.
Well, you know, and John, to your point as well, it's easy to make those decisions or easier to make those decisions when, you know, and you referenced it, Jordan Poole's having an incredible year last year. Steph Curry's mm-hmm. playing out of this world. Draymond Green still looks pretty good. Andrew Wiggins is having an all-star year. Well, now when all these guys aren't playing at that level and your record is a couple of games below 500, now you're, and your supporting cast isn't very good or isn't as good as it needs to be, you start looking and saying, okay, when's the trade deadline? Yeah. Like, what, how long are you going to give it? You're going to give it to the 20 game mark? Well, that's only a couple of games away. 30, 40. Like, it's, they're in a tough spot, I think, right now, when you factor in what they have, to go back to what I said a couple of minutes ago, I guess, what they have, what value do those people still have when you then also factor in the money that they make. It's not going to be easy. Like, everybody under the sun wants to play the rumor mill of Draymond Green might end up with the Lakers. And well, Draymond on his own wouldn't get enough from the Lakers. So then are you packaging with somebody? And then, well, the Lakers are in a mess too. Like, and it's not a guarantee that he's going to go to LA either. I think people are just buying into how close he is with LeBron, but that's another team. I mean, I don't know if Bob, you're going to bring them up, but there's another team. Think of the talent that they have. It's a lot of name talent. It's a lot of all-star talent. It's a lot of all-world talent, but the supporting cast isn't the greatest and they're struggling to really keep it together because it's a lot of guys that are aging, dealing with injuries, guys that aren't playing as well as they have or need to. And suddenly you're leaning on what else do we have? And now what can we do to really improve this thing? They're another club that's in a real tough spot.
I watched them play last night and I'm just shaking my head. I'm just shaking my head. You know, I thought Phoenix toyed with them.
Yeah.
You know, I really did. I mean, it's just, and I, you know, there's still that cockiness in Russell Westbrook that you say, guy, come on. I know you're going to, you know, you got more money than God, but you know, this is not an individual sport anymore for you. You can't play the game the way you played 10 years ago. You have to play the team sport. And it just, to me, the Lakers, you know, it must be fun to live in LA, but it's certainly not fun to lose this as much as they do. Cause it's really embarrassing.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I expected nothing from the Lakers this year. I think they're a bad team in a mess, and they.
Expect this bad, Bob. I didn't expect this bad.
I agree. Well, I didn't either.
Yeah,
maybe not.
The father time thing with LeBron too. Like, he's starting to miss games now. He is
missed and, last night, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
He didn't play last night.
He missed a few, and
Antonio Davis is saying. Hold on, Antonio Davis said, "Hold on, I came here to play with LeBron."
Yeah, yeah, and he's a guy too that Davis. I mean, he's been great the last four or five games, but now they don't have LeBron. So I thought.
Well, Jonesy, hold on. Lineup. You have the best line though with Anthony Davis. I don't want to steal your line, so I'll hand it off to you because he got hurt again last night, and I was this close to texting you before he ultimately kept playing and had a hell of a game, albeit in the loss, but. But Jonesy's right about what he says about Anthony Davis, because you're just waiting. You're waiting, Jonesy, right? Like, come on, give it to me.
He leads the league in MRIs. I mean, Charles Barkley's calling him street clothes Davis. I mean, look, I go back to last year when they picked the top 75 or a couple of years ago. Yeah. There's no way he's a top 75 player in front of a guy like, I don't know, Alex English or Dwight Howard or whatever. There's a recency bias there, but
that's my favorite phrase these days, Paul. Recency bias.
Oh yeah, people think all the youngsters now. Here's the hashtag: old man, get off my lawn. But all the youngsters think everything started way back in 2000.
Yeah,
like somebody, one of the guys in our group chat who's younger. I'm in a group chat. The guy said something about the Leafs winning a cup. And I said, I saw that back in 67. I was alive for that. I might not see another one, but I was alive for that one. And it's a great phrase, John, the recency bias.
We've only got a few minutes left. I want to mention there were two teams at the beginning of this year that I was keeping an eye on. And I think most people were teams that I thought were going to be had a chance to emerge as really good teams. Cleveland in the East and Memphis in the West. Cleveland has been about what you would expect. Memphis has not. And that's very surprising to me. Tell me what you've seen with them and what you expect from them.
I think that they will eventually get it on track, Bob, because I think it goes back to what we talked about with the Toronto Raptors right off the top. And I think injuries have played a major key. You know, having a piece like Jackson out of the lineup for quite some time to start the year, and now obviously of late losing their biggest piece and their most important cog in Ja Morant, I think that's been the biggest issue of all. And I got to assume that when they are healthy, things will the ship will be right in a sense, and they will look a heck of a lot better than what they maybe have over the first 20 games. That's as simplistic as I can put it.
Yeah.
You know, John talked about the injuries with Memphis, you know, with Toronto. I mean, Jaren Jackson Jr. just came back into the lineup.
Yeah.
Ja Morant was out. Desmond Bane, who's been a heck of a player for them, is now out. Injuries will derail you in a heartbeat. And who was the other team you were talking
Cleveland.
About? Bobcat?
Cleveland.
Cavs.
Oh, Cleveland. I like the Donovan Mitchell move.
Sure do I.
I like them before they even got Mitchell. And then all of a sudden they get exactly. Donovan Mitchell. I'm like, my goodness. Yeah.
And once they figure it out, because they got a guy who can coach there in JB Bickerstaff, Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell are terrific backcourt. They have traditional bigs in a sense with Mobley and Allen the way they play. And when they galvanize, they could be a really, really tough out come playoff time.
Well, Boston and Milwaukee are 1-2, but Cleveland is right behind them and not far behind them. And I think they'll stay there or better as the year progresses. I think Cleveland's a real good lineup.
This is the first show we've done all season long on basketball without saying Kyrie's name, so I had to say it.
Let's not say it anymore.
No, I know, but we just had to say it. You know, now that he's back playing.
Oh, is he? Boys, our time is done. Smith, Jones, we love you. Thanks, pals.
Thanks, guys.
We'll talk again soon. Right. We'll be back after this.
The world's greatest sporting event only rolls around every 4 years, and every 4 years, everyone becomes a soccer fan. That's right. Billions of eyes are about to fall upon 32 nations battling it out for soccer supremacy. The Men in Blazers podcast will once again be your guide to every incredible goal, every heartbreaking defeat, and every moment of human triumph. This is America's number one soccer podcast, bringing you expert analysis of every U.S. men's national game and exclusive interviews from a slew of athletes and celebrity guests all month long. This is what the world will be talking about. This is the one podcast that makes soccer fun and entertaining for everyone. Follow Men in Blazers on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or listen early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
All right, thanks to Smith and Jones for being with us. A little NBA talk. We're going to do soccer tomorrow?
For part of it, at least, for sure. You have to do it. You know, Canada's game today, we're going to break it down and figure out what happened, what went right, what went wrong. And then, you know, there's Bob. I know it's only this first round where you don't have to win all three games and lots of teams get through, but to see the Saudis do what they did against Argentina yesterday and Japan beating Germany, all this is going to do is create more interest in the tournament. And it's phenomenal to think that we've had already two really big upsets. And even more that, I mean, you know, Tunisia to draw with Denmark. Boy, oh boy, that's there's a real story there. Something's going on with the world of soccer.
We talk about parity in sports, and I hate it. There's nothing I hate worse, but there's parity in the NHL, and there's certainly parity in the NBA. Maybe their parity has come to world soccer.
The other thing is you wonder if technology has gone too far in soccer. The VAR, you know, the video review system, the protocols, you know, gosh, it's, you know, the stoppage time. I mean, it's one of the magic things about the game for years was it was 90 minutes of soccer with a 15-minute halftime, and boom, it was over. Now, you know, we're injury time's longer, extra time is longer. You know, referees are taking more time to go over and walk over to the monitor and look at scenarios, calling fouls off of the monitor after the fact.
That bugs you?
The dehumanizing aspect of the sport, yes, it does. I know we want to get it right, but I almost wonder if they've carried it too far.
No, I don't think so.
You know, that they missed a foul. And the VAR, you get to go over and see if the guy tugged on his shirt, like we saw in the England game earlier this week. You know, I don't like all the technology. I like certain technology. You know, ball across line. You know, offside maybe. I can live with both of those.
That's a little bit being a little bit pregnant. I don't think you can do that. Either you use the technology or you don't.
But Bob, we saw it in the CF. We saw it at the Grey Cup.
I don't care.
They did the video of whether it's pass interference or not. Pass interference is subjective. You know, fouls are subjective. I think it goes a bit too far. Yeah, just I'm old fashioned. I'm not a modern man like you, Bob.
No, well that's true, John.
Yes, I know.
And that's to your discredit, I think, because I think you've got to use the technology that you have. And to use it a little bit is a mistake.
Ball across line. That's what I need. Is it in or not? That's what I want.
I think you got technology. You might as well use it. For a long time, they had the technology and didn't use it at all.
Correct. It's right.
At all. And I guess now the question is, how much do you want to use it? How much do you want to bring it?
And I think they're using it too much.
And I don't. So there you go. We'll talk right. about Canada's performance against Belgium tomorrow. We'll do a little soccer for you. We hope you'll join us for that. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan. See you.